What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
Prevention of crime. Every hour of the day and night.
Movie.
Break.
Is the team that protects your property and you.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Break Podcast, episode 3 from this year's Sundance Film Festival, the last edition in Park City. I'm still Patrick, and with me is...
Lida, hi!
Hi Lida, we are on day 5 at Sundance, and I feel like while the world seems on fire as usual these days, we hear in our little festival world, we don't hear too much about all these goings on in the world. Are you in any way connected to the outside world these days?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I mean, of course, we all hear about the ICE shootings and violence. That is scary. And actually, there was even an incident here at Sundance that a Democratic congressman got punched. Did you read about it?
I heard about it too, yeah.
Attacked, and it was a racist incident. So, it feels kind of uncomfortable because you often want to think that this is kind of like a liberal film bubble. And of course, these bubbles don't exist. I want to, but they don't.
Yeah, that's the rough version of when Thierry Frémont a few years ago was reprimanded by a police officer because he was biking in an area in Cannes where he wasn't supposed to bike, you know, the festival director in Cannes. Well, in any case, how are you doing?
I'm actually quite okay. I'm getting really tired, but thanks to the good American coffee, I still feel pretty awake, which is really like a difference. Like the coffee here is just like it just hits differently, and I'm getting over my trauma that I didn't get to the screening of The Invite, even though I had a ticket. I'm slowly getting over it.
Oh yeah, it's a film. Perhaps I still talk about that. I think I don't talk about it today, but I will before I leave Park City. I can already say that was a very fun movie.
Everybody loved it. Like I hear it when queuing for tickets, I hear everybody like loving it. So
it's, to me, it feels like one of these old school studio comedies, you know, and I think we don't get these anymore. So I think people are really up for that and people are desirous for that. In any case, we have a mixed bag today, I think, of movies. I will perhaps start with John Wilson's The History of Concrete, a sort of documentary. We know his sort of formula from his series How To with John Wilson that played on HBO. The movie then, that's his first documentary feature, if you will. He also starts the film by saying, oh, I had this HBO show and what am I going to do now? The film is still in the past of the strikes, of the Writers Guild strikes in America, and it has this interesting, funny premise that the only workshop he can attend at that time is for how to make a Hallmark movie. And this is how this all, I don't know, gains traction. And the conceit here is that he wants to make a film about concrete, the material, but in the Hallmark formula. Can't really say that the film plays out that way, but as with him so often, this is a film about digressions. I think you couldn't really tell much of a difference to how his show plays out. I don't know. Did you watch any of his?
No.
Okay.
I know which film you're talking about, and I thought the idea was interesting, but I haven't seen any of his other work.
Also, I mean, the series just, I don't know, it's a very random concept. He basically picks one specific topic. I mean, I have only seen the pilot of his show, but that was about scaffolding in New York because the city is full of scaffolding and it actually makes the city quite ugly. And but it's everywhere and people have learned to live with it and have come to terms with it. It's all really a matter of insurance, right? Because the facades are often tearing down, broken, and when things fall off and hit passersby, that of course then the insurance companies have to, or the people who own the property, so rather they have these insurances, and through that they get these scaffolding. But, you know, he picks these very tiny topics that still make out our daily lived experience of living in a city or in urban spaces. He's a New Yorker, or at least that's where he's based, and he talks a lot about New York. This time he talks about concrete and in very different facets, as you would expect. Sometimes it really plays out as a live commentary of certain images that he just captures of, oh, there's a funny little notion in the city. And sometimes feel like he films it without even knowing exactly what he's going to do with it, but then he all edits it together to one thing that is more or less coherent. And to me, that is full of digressions in a way maybe early novels are, like Tristram Shandy you might think of. And it's very charming. He has also this very, very distinct voice that you recognize. And the film even makes fun of it, because apparently there was an AI at some point that uses his voice to advertise things about home improvement or something. It's all very fun. It's I think everyone gets a laugh out of it. Often it's very, like, he just throws out certain punchlines and you end up at places you wouldn't expect. There is apparently in Queens, there is a 3,100 miles run every year. So you can imagine, right? 3,100 miles. So apparently people do that every year. And he takes a look at that. Then he takes a look at a guy who gets rid of the chewing gum on the concrete in the city that we all know. We all know these stains on the ground. Then, because he is contractually obliged to have a musician in his documentary, so he tries to find a musician. It's all very fun. It's all very silly. And I would recommend it. It's a fun thing that you don't go wrong with, I think. So, yeah, The History of Concrete, John Wilson. It's a recommendation from my side. What do you have for us, Lida?
Well, there's one film that's actually from a German director that had her big breakthrough at the last Berlinale with the film Hero, or the German title Helden. And Petra Wolpe, she's not German, she's from Switzerland. Oh, okay. Almost the same. Okay. Yeah, she's from Switzerland. And now she's here with her second film and her first English language film. It's a UK co-production about a prison program in which an inmate has to take care of another inmate who suffers from Alzheimer's disease. Generally, there's this program in prison where long-time inmates take care of elderly other inmates with dementia, mental digression, all these kinds of diseases, in the hope, of course, to get parole or to get a few perks, but also just for the human connection and to have some kind of occupation. You know, days in prison can be very, very long, especially if you're there for life. And Frank and Louis is the name of the film. The press screening was super crowded, so apparently many people had this film on their radar. And I did like it, but I have to say that it felt much more conventional than her debut film, Helden, or Hero. And it felt kind of like I almost had the feeling that the director felt that she had to follow a certain specific narrative curve of independent prison drama. And it's very well acted. It's well shot. It has some very interesting moments. But overall, it felt disappointingly conventional. It's not a bad film. I still would recommend to see it. But you just cannot expect this kind of urgency and realist moments that her first film about this nurse, this completely overworked nurse in an ER or in a hospital unit in Switzerland had. And I think the interesting thing, especially about this view into the Swiss medical system, is that everybody would imagine it to be like flawless. You know, Switzerland, public health insurance in one of the richest European countries and one of the richest countries in the whole world. And then it's such a mess. And you see, like, it just sucks like everywhere else. And here we just get a lot of prison cliches.
I also heard that it really differs whether you are in the Romandie, so the French-speaking part of Switzerland, or the German-speaking one. Where is it set exactly, the story?
So that was another thing, because I always was looking for some kind of cue if it's set in the US or in the UK. But I honestly have to say, from just what the film gave me, I don't know. I think it's set in the US, but it could also be the UK. I could find nothing specific that would just like give me this idea that I said, like, okay, this is long. The US. I think from the language, I would say it was American English, and I had the idea that it was the American prison system, but I don't really know how a British prison looks from the inside, so I'm not completely sure. And it's kind of weird that you would have a Swiss-UK co-production making a movie about a US prison.
Right, yeah. I think I got a bit confused here with... I thought then it had to do with Switzerland as well, but not at all. It's just the production side.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So it was still, I don't regret at all seeing it. It's still, as I said, a great acting showcase. Like we have here Ben Adir Kingsley and Rob Morgan as the two leads, and they do both a great job. And there are really a couple of touching moments. Or some very interesting moral questions, which unfortunately aren't so deeply explored. For example, this question, if you have forgotten what you have done, do you still deserve to be punished? And this is also a question on which I've grappled with a personal level. Like, if you have parents with dementia and you're very, very angry with your parents, and your parents have forgotten everything they have done to you and have forgotten who you are, do you still have a reason to be mad at them? Or do you have a right to be mad at them? It's like, so there's a lot of thing for everybody in this film, like especially people, and I think there are a lot of people who experience dementia in their family. But as a film, I would have wanted more from her. But I'm still looking forward to her next movie.
I like how you frame a story that is partially about the damage that families do to each other, that this is a film for everybody.
Because we're all damaged by our families. Yeah.
And I totally relate to what you said about the narrative arc being transparent, because that is one of the most alienating thing I think you can experience as a viewer in the audience, when you see the underlying construct of it all. So that seems to be not a wholehearted thumbs up from your side.
Yeah, it's more like, if I would say it like something like 3.5 points or 5 or 4 or 5, you know, if you have to put it like that. So more like middle thumbs up or half or one thumb up.
Okay. Could you remind us of the title again once more?
Frank and Louis.
Frank and Louis. Okay. And yeah, perhaps we go on to the next film that to me was one of the most highly anticipated one. That is the new Kugonada film, Z. I think it's a bit complicated because my partner speaks Chinese as well, and this is a film set in Hong Kong, so it's not Mandarin, but it's, what's the language again in Hong Kong? Cantonese. But the way they use that title is a bit different than what the sound would actually sound like. But in any case, Z is the title of the film, and this was a very makeshift production. They apparently went, so this is Kugonada, whom we all might know from films like Columbus, a film I really liked from maybe now 10 years ago or so. There was also the film After Yang that played in Cannes, I think in Instant Regard, and that already had Colin Farrell attached, so that was quite a step up. However, last year's, what was it called? A Big Beautiful Journey or something like that, with Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie. And that was apparently a disaster, that film. I don't know if you saw it.
I never saw it. I don't even think it had a cinematic release in Germany.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in any case, that was clearly a studio production. So that was more of an assignment, you might say. This, he declared himself, was more of a passion project to him, and I don't know if that got entirely translated. At least I didn't feel that so much. It's a story that is more of a high concept, if you will. We have a young woman who is somewhat confused. We learn that she might or might not have a tumor in her brain, and something is going on with her memory. And then she meets another yeah, Anglophone person, Hayley Lou Richardson, who wears this weird hairpiece. And with her alongside, we find out more and more about her deal, really, but also we don't. It's up to the end. There is something that we can perceive already in the background that makes this all much more complicated, but the film doesn't really reveal that until the end. But there is something about time, how this is all set in an interstitial space of time, and time seems to be deferred, so some events might have already occurred, but the way she perceives it is life, so to speak. And that's the entire conceit of this. We're in Hong Kong, we spend a lot of time just outside. It's all taking place over one evening, basically, over one night. And yeah, the problem is, I think from the start, I found the film to be trying so much to be profound, and it really screamed at you, I am profound. I am a high concept film. And this never quite, yeah, translated to me. I was somewhat disappointed. I think the midsection of the film becomes better, because then it's more about these characters just being in the moment, spending time together, being on these outside markets at night in Hong Kong, and it feels much more organic when it is not burdened by this, yeah, higher concept that the film apparently pursues. And I think this has always been Kogonada's strength, to be in the moment and to have just people, I don't know, create a space together. However, I think the film really gets choked up by the overall idea and the trajectory that I think it can never quite do justice to. And that's why that was one of the major disappointments to me. Is that a film that you will try to catch when it hits German theaters at some point, if it might?
After what you said, I was first curious because the concept sounded interesting, even though it wasn't on my top list. But after what you said, I can very well imagine that it would be like that. That's like how this is exactly how it could go wrong. And therefore, I wouldn't bend my back to catch it. If yeah. It comes, if I stumble across it, maybe, but...
Yeah, I will say there's still these signature shots by Kogonada. He's very good at, you know, observing faces, looking at architecture and so on. That was one of the strongholds of Columbus. But this really ends nowhere, and it's not really related to the overall story. So it feels very dissociated from everything else. So yeah, I cannot recommend this film. But Lida, perhaps you have something.
Well, I again watched another drama that was very well acted, even though the plot did not completely fulfill what I had hoped it would. Because Union County, it's the debut film by Adam Meeks, based on his short film of the same name. And it has a little bit prominent cast, so that is interesting. Like, we have, for example, Will Poulter as the main actor, and... Yeah, he does a great job as this young man who struggles with addiction and is committed to a rehab center in the titular rural area. But the whole premise of the film, according to the program, is that it deals with the opioid crisis, and it doesn't. Or apparently it doesn't, because the people are addicts, but they're not opioid addicts. They're addicted, at least the main characters are addicted to heroin, and sorry, but heroin hasn't been used as an over-the-counter prescribed medication since 1925 or something like that. So no, heroin is not something that you would wrap in with the opioid epidemic. The opioid epidemic refers to stuff like Dilaudid, fentanyl, and my favorite, oxycodone. So... it would have been so interesting to explore these structures and how this is, for example, that opioids are basically also more a middle class drug. and how people that actually have pain and have illnesses can get addicted, and this balance between being dependent and being addicted. But the film does nothing of that. It's just like another conventional rehab drama. It's well done, it's well directed, it has a great camera, it's great acting, but again, very conventional narrative.
Yeah, I don't get how these texts are written sometimes, you know, when they clearly fool you into believing something that the film cannot actually pay off or just be true to. So it's strange. It's strange to hear that.
Yeah, but I actually think that the people who wrote this text, they didn't really know what opioids were. They just thought, okay, rural area, poverty, drug addiction, it's the opioid epidemic because there's an overlap. But many people don't know the difference between an opiate and an opioid.
Well, that includes me. Could you describe that very quickly?
So basically, an opioid is a chemically generated copy of an opiate. So very simple. Morphium is an opiate. Oxycodone is an opioid. So if it's natural, it's an opiate. And if it's a drug, if it's medicine, then it's an artificial, like chemical, then it's an opioid.
Well, okay. I mean, that's not that kind of podcast, but what is the difference for the users then?
Okay, so there's a lot of discontent about what is the difference. Basically, I'm walking on very thin ice now. So often it's said that the chemically generated opioids are much more effective than the biological.
Mm-hmm.
There's no medical study that proves that. And there's a lot of theories that actually natural morphine from the opium poppy plant is still the best painkiller around. The problem, of course, with those chemical painkillers is that they are highly addictive, and this has not been labeled. So they have been just pushed to the population with the pretense that they were not addictive at all, and a ton of people who were in short-term pain got addicted. So that's basically the problem. And morphine has a bad rap, and that's due to everybody advertising opioids. But morphine is actually pretty safe. So if you have the choice between oxycodone and morphine, take morphine, because it's less addictive than oxycodone.
I see, yeah. And this entire, I mean, it's a really widespread phenomenon of the deaths of despair, right? Is that commented on in the film? Is this considered to be a structural problem in the film? Or
not at all. You never see anybody using drugs in the film, and that also said something. And you never see somebody in, like, fighting with a monkey or anything. Like, it just feels very theoretically, very removed, very PG.
Yeah, okay. Well, I feel like we didn't have a film that we can clearly recommend this episode. I will still go for the invite that I will talk about next episode, promised. In the meantime, I think we are good for today.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay. Thank you, Lida. And dear listeners, we are sorry that the background noise might have been a bit troubling. But
yeah, it's a bit atmosphere, you know, atmospheric background.
It happened as we were going, because when we started, it was all quiet. So yeah, bear with us and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.